This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton. There's a new update on the China balloon shot down last week by the U.S. military. AP's Jackie Quinn has more.
The yeas are 419, the nays are zero.
And members of Congress received classified briefings about China's aerial spy program.
Nobody wants spy balloons flying over whatever state it is, right? And we need to do more to address it.
Alaska Republican Senator Dan Sullivan thinks the balloon should have been shot down before it flew over his state. And what if it had been a missile? Montana Senator Steve Daines concerned about what information the device might have picked up over his state.
Hovered over the most powerful weapons known to mankind, which are called intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Democrat Richard Blumenthal is also calling for a crackdown on China's spying.
Part of a effort to do not only surveillance, but disruption.
I'm Jackie Quinn.
Rescue crews in Turkey and Syria raced against time Thursday to find survivors buried in the rubble of buildings toppled by a 7.8 magnitude earthquake on Monday that has killed more than 20,000 people. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the first aid convoy reached victims in northern Syria on Thursday. He appealed for more access and funds to assist the millions affected by the earthquake. He listed some of the things the aid convoy is providing.
We are deploying disaster assessment experts, coordinating search and rescue teams, providing emergency relief, food, medical supplies, thermal blankets, and other life-saving items.
And he said much, much more help is needed. Media reports say former U.S. Vice President Mike Pence has been subpoenaed by the special counsel leading probes into classified documents found at former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence and efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election result. VOA News. Yahoo said Thursday that it plans to lay off more than 20% of its total workforce as part of a major restructuring of its ad tech division. This report produced by Freddie Joyner.
Yahoo is going through a major overhaul and says it plans to lay off more than 20% of its total workforce. The cuts, part of a major restructuring of the company's ad tech division, will impact nearly 50% of Yahoo's employees in that division by the end of this year, including nearly 1,000 employees this week. This comes as many advertisers have pared back their marketing budgets in response to record high inflation rates and continued uncertainty about a recession.
That's Reuters' Freddie Joyner reporting. Nicaraguan President Daniel Ortega has said the release of more than 200 political prisoners in Nicaragua, including opposition leaders, on Thursday was not negotiated with the United States in exchange for Washington lifting sanctions on the Central American nation. In a televised speech Thursday, Ortega denied that releasing political prisoners was part of a negotiation with the U.S.
No estamos pidiendo que nos levanten las sanciones.
He said, we are not asking for sanctions to be lifted, and we are not asking for anything in return. It is a matter of honor, dignity, patriotism. The released prisoners include five former presidential hopefuls who challenged Ortega at the polls in 2021. And musician Rihanna is putting the finishing touches on her halftime show for Sunday's Super Bowl. AP Entertainment correspondent Margie Zaraletta reports.
Rihanna had previously turned down the Super Bowl halftime show, but she said yes this year for two reasons. She's a mom now and feels like she can take on the world, and because she wants to be a great example for immigrants and for black women. However, planning a halftime show is hard. Rihanna says in an NFL Network Apple Music News conference, some of her songs did not make the cut.
You only have 13 minutes. That's the challenge. So you're trying to cram 17 years of work into 13 minutes.
I'm Margie Zaraletta.
Reuters is reporting that U.S. President Joe Biden's administration is developing a sweeping bill that would revamp the country's asylum system to speed up the resolution of claims in large-scale processing centers at the border with Mexico. The news agency cited two officials from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security who spoke anonymously about the internal deliberations. The effort emerged from ongoing Biden administration discussions to reimagine asylum as border crossings have reached record highs and immigration courts face steep backlogs. And Finnish parliamentary groups are expected to discuss on Friday when to ratify NATO's founding treaties. It's a move that could lead the country to proceed with membership ahead of neighboring Sweden. From Washington, I'm Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Thank you. Today's Friday, February 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, hope fades for survivors of Turkey and Syria earthquakes as the UN faces difficulty reaching victims.
It becomes quite difficult to get in, and we have to negotiate access to areas which are contested. We have to negotiate with multiple governmental and non-state partners.
Ukraine president meets European leaders as NATO accuses Moscow of escalating its invasion.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg at a news conference in Washington, alongside U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, told reporters Moscow is preparing for new military offensives.
And anger on the streets of Nigeria over inflation and currency scarcity ahead of the February 25th polls. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Thousands who lost their homes in a catastrophic earthquake huddled around campfires and clamored for food and water in the bitter cold 3 days after the tremor and a series of aftershocks hit Turkey and Syria. Emergency crews used pickaxes, shovels and jackhammers to dig through twisted metal and concrete. This as the first UN aid convoy has entered rebel-held Syria as the earthquake death toll passes 21,000. Getting through areas controlled by the government and others controlled by rebels has made it harder for humanitarian workers to reach survivors. The World Food Programme's country director for Syria, Ken Crossley, tells VOA's Carol Van Damme the UN agency has reached nearly 64,000 people in urgent need of food.
We definitely see a lot of devastation. Buildings collapsed, houses collapsed. Of course, the first responders on scene searching through the rubble, hospitals getting a lot of attention. So it truly is a difficult, difficult scene. It had been cold and snowy, people sleeping on the streets, people in shelters, people sleeping in cars, unable to go back into their homes, which had been damaged or destroyed.
We heard from a lot of rescue workers and reporters yesterday that are on the scene there that it's so cold that they were worried they're not going to be able to pull any more people alive out of the rubble. Is that the case?
That has been the case. Definitely for those who are doing the first line response, the working conditions are horrible. And yes, it really is discouraging thinking about people who might not yet have been found and who might still be under the rubble. The other part of the story is the response of the community has been tremendous. Neighbors, volunteers, community organizations, shelters springing up. And so people who are able to get some assistance in these shelters from their neighbors, from community organizations, and of course from our own international assistance as well.
Tell me what WFP is doing there right now.
Right. So we are, of course, primarily interested just in making sure that people who are just newly displaced or suffering from the disaster have food to eat. We're working with local partners on the ground within hours of the earthquake. The partners were using some of our assistance to provide hot meals to people in shelters. We've been providing meals ready to eat, tinned food, things that don't require cooking. Now within a few days, we've now reached nearly 45,000 people with this assistance working through the local community partners here on the ground, just ensuring that people have food in their stomachs and something to sustain them for the next week or two. The number, unfortunately, is growing in terms of the number of people we need, and therefore we're continuing rapidly to be dispatching supplies and goods and food through our partners to all of these growing caseloads that we're getting to in increasingly difficult areas to reach.
And when you speak about getting to those areas, is it increasingly difficult as well? Because this is a war-ravaged area where the quake hit to make matters even more miserable for people there.
That is the case, although we should recognize WFP feeds already 5.5 million people per month across all of Syria. We're in areas, we respond to people's need wherever they are, whoever they are, without respect to who the authorities are in that place. We've got extensive networks and relationships with community organizations. So we were able to leverage those extensive networks. We were able to leverage some of the food we already had in hand for our programs in order to provide rapid relief. However, as soon as we try and replenish the stocks, which are drawing down, then yes, it becomes quite difficult to get in. We have to negotiate access to areas which are contested. We have to negotiate with multiple governmental and non-state partners. We have to navigate checkpoints, sometimes mined roads, etc. And so it definitely is impeding the access for replenishing of the stocks.
That's Ken Crossley, World Food Program Country Director in Syria, speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam. Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky met European leaders for talks on Thursday, during a visit to Brussels, where he called for more weapons to fend off Russia's invasion and a quick start to talks for his country to join the EU. On the sidelines of a summit with the bloc's 27 leaders, he also held a group meeting with the Prime Minister of Hungary, Denmark, Finland, and Austria, among others. At the end of the summit, Zelensky told a news conference he had heard from several leaders that they were ready to provide Kyiv with aircraft, hinting at what would be one of the biggest shifts yet in Western support for Ukraine. There are no signs Russia is preparing for peace nearly a year after invading Ukraine, according to the head of the Western Military Alliance. This story from VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg at a news conference in Washington, alongside U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, told reporters Moscow is preparing for new military offensives. He said a Russian victory would be a tragedy for Ukraine, but what happens in Europe also matters in Asia.
Beijing is watching closely and learning lessons that may influence its future decisions.
The NATO chief also said China is substantially building up, without transparency, its military forces, including nuclear weapons. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Steve. Australian Defence Minister Richard Marles Thursday told Parliament that a controversial AUKUS submarine deal with the US and the UK enhances Australian sovereignty and does not increase dependence on the United States, as claimed by critics. The pact was signed by Australia, the United States and Britain in September 2021, but has been condemned by China. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Defence Minister Richard Marles told Parliament Thursday that receiving at least 8 nuclear-powered submarines under the AUKUS pact will dramatically enhance Australia's sovereignty rather than erode it. Marles argued that Australia needed British and American expertise to enhance its military capabilities. China accused Australia, the United Kingdom and the United States of fueling military confrontation when the AUKUS Accord was signed in 2021. The alliance has been criticised by former Australian Prime Ministers Malcolm Turnbull and Paul Keating, who've said the deal would erode the country's sovereignty. Turnbull told local media last week that the government had to determine whether the submarines could be operated, sustained and maintained by Australia without the support or supervision of the US Navy. Jordan Steele John, a Greens Party senator, has also criticised the accords. He told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Thursday that it makes Australia increasingly dependent on the US and Britain.
Either of those nations could decide they no longer wish to participate in such a project or pact, leaving our capacity literally dead in the water. The Australian community is very rightly concerned about the greater integration and interreliance that this will create.
Specific details of the trilateral accord will be released soon. British politicians have reportedly suggested that the AUKUS project should be expanded to include India and Japan. In response, China's foreign ministry said it was seriously concerned and opposed to the military pact. Beijing has previously accused Australia, the United Kingdom and the United States of fueling military confrontation when the AUKUS Accord was signed in 2021. Australia has been trying to rebuild its fractured relationship with China in recent months. Analysts say it's a delicate enterprise, given the tensions over trade and other geopolitical issues. On Thursday, Australia said it would be removing hundreds of Chinese-made security cameras at official buildings across Australia. Marles conceded there was a potential security problem that needed to be addressed. There's no evidence so far of any breaches of national security, but Miles said the devices would be taken down. Britain and America have done the same thing because of concerns the equipment could contain spyware. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In other news, thousands of demonstrators marched through Peru's southern city of Juliaca on Thursday to commemorate the one-month anniversary of the deadliest clash in recent anti-government protests. The demonstrations came amid calls for a national strike and passed through the city's airport, where most of the nearly 20 people were killed and were shot by security forces. Despite its being home to iconic tourist sites like Machu Picchu and are hosting a vast mineral wealth, Peru's rural copper-rich southern region lags behind in much of the country in education, health and income. It is also where the vast majority of the 48 deaths during protests have occurred. Protests supporting Castillo quickly turned into a wider anti-government movement following the violent crackdown on protesters. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Rising inflation, high unemployment and a diminishing currency are the economic backdrop to Nigeria's presidential election later this month, prompting sparks of anger among voters. David Doyle of Reuters has more.
At a bank in Nigeria's capital, tempers are flaring. Some have been forced to wait for hours to withdraw very little money.
In my own country, we...
This is Abuja resident Adebayo Babatunde.
Today, I cannot withdraw more than 1,000 naira. And they tell me now, I'm from my bank now. They say it's only 1,000 naira note they can give me.
That's less than $3. With a presidential and parliamentary election later this month, the economy, dogged by surging inflation, widespread unemployment and acute shortages of foreign currency, is adding to voter frustration. A central bank decision to replace old banknotes has also caused controversy, as there are not enough new notes in circulation. But it's not just cash that's scarce. Arguments break out at fuel stations as well. In Lagos, this is one of just a few in the vicinity that still have petrol, amid recurring fuel shortages. Bus driver Titus Nwafor.
People are suffering. There's no money.
But he says politicians on the campaign trail are not offering solutions. President Muhammadu Buhari promised to revive the economy and improve livelihoods when he took office in 2015. He prioritized infrastructure, spending billions of dollars on new roads, bridges, airports and rail. But that came at a cost. Nigeria's foreign debt has risen fourfold under Buhari to $40 billion. The budget deficit has widened every year. Buhari has also introduced protectionist policies, including import bans on rice. That was a spur to local production, until increasing insecurity hit farmers' ability to plant. With the cost of fertilizer and diesel also high, the price of a 50-kilogram bag of rice rose nearly 90% last year to almost $120. The situation has been exacerbated by the global health crisis, war in Ukraine, and crude oil price slumps, as well as heavy flooding last year that experts linked to climate change. Buhari says his government has been laying the foundations for a stronger economy. But many complain conditions have got worse under his watch.
That's David Doyle of Reuters. And the presidents of Kenya and Eritrea have wrapped up 2 days of talks by agreeing to remove visa requirements for their citizens as part of improving relations. Kenya's William Ruto and his Eritrean counterpart, Isaias Afwerki, also agreed to promote regional peace and stability, even as Eritrea faces questions of alleged rights abuses in Ethiopia. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Eritrean President Isaias Afwerki concluded his meetings with Kenya's William Ruto by agreeing to rejoin the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, an East African trade bloc, to assist with regional peace processes.
This is an obligation. In the name of the peoples of the whole region, we have to assume responsibility. and revitalizing IGAD so that we can have a functional, real organization for the region is critical. Without that mechanism, ideals, goodwill will not be productive. We'll have to create an institution that is functional and result-oriented so that we can say we have changed the face of the region.
Eritrea suspended its IGAD membership in 2007 following a disagreement with Ethiopia over the presence of Ethiopian troops in Somalia. In 2018, Eritrea and Ethiopia re-established diplomatic relations and agreed to end years of hostility. President Ruto said he expects Eritrea to support the region's ongoing security operations and peace efforts.
And I look forward to working with you to ensure that we stabilize Somalia, we eliminate terrorism, and we build a much more secure region. I also look forward, Your Excellency, to working with you in resolving the issues in Sudan and South Sudan and working with our brothers in Ethiopia to build a better region for all our people and ensuring that we make this region attractive for investment and for trade and for business.
Eritrea, Ethiopia's neighbor, has been accused of widespread human rights violations in two-year conflict that erupted in November 2020 between Ethiopian federal government forces and the Tigray rebel group. Last November, the government in Addis Ababa and representatives from the Tigray region in northern Ethiopia signed a peace agreement. Tigray officials and residents say Eritrean troops have yet to leave the region months after signing a peace agreement that requires Asmara to withdraw its forces. Afewerki dismissed the allegations against his troops.
Why are you bothered about Eritrean troops who are there or not there, come out and not come out? Let's assume that the peace process in Ethiopia is going without any obstacles. We would like to see the agreement signed in Pretoria or Nairobi implemented on the ground so that we can secure peace and stability in Ethiopia for the benefit not only of Ethiopians but the whole region.
Eritrea has denied its troops fought in Ethiopia's conflict in Tigray region. The rights group alleged the troops committed atrocities, including punishing families of accused draft dodgers. Meanwhile, Human Rights Watch on Thursday called for sanctions against Eritrea for the government's alleged role in rounding up people and their family members who refused to participate in mandatory military service. Letitia Badar heads the Horn of Africa operation at Human Rights Watch. She says since September of last year, the Eritrean conscription campaign has been targeting draft evaders.
They have resorted to new methods of repression against families of alleged draft evaders. So we found that they were detaining relatives, including older people, but they were also evicting people from their homes. So this was not only the security forces, but alongside local officials that keep lists of households through a coupon system, which enables people to have access to subsidized goods. And they were going door to door and trying to identify individuals who were missing.
The US-based rights organization is urging the international community to pressure Asmara to reform what Human Rights Watch calls Eritrea's abusive national service system. The rights group says the system continues to drive Eritreans into exile. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study led by the University of Texas at Austin details the discovery of a new layer of semi-molten rock located between the Earth's crust and mantle and just underneath the tectonic plates. Scientists had thought that there were patches of the partially melted rock around the world, but the study proposes that it may encompass half of the Earth. The study suggests that this gooey rock layer sits about 160 kilometers beneath the Earth's surface and is considered to be a part of the asthenosphere in the upper mantle. According to a university press release, the asthenosphere plays an important role in plate tectonics because it provides a fairly soft region that lets the plates move through the mantle. Some scientists are saying that this study may provide new insight into how the tectonic plates move. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. On this U.S. Politics Edition, the State of the Union
President Joe Biden delivers his annual address to a less welcoming Congress this year, since the lower chamber is dominated by opposition Republicans. Nonetheless, Biden will tout his many legislative and foreign policy achievements over the past 2 years and likely set the stage for his re-election in 2024. The State of the Union next on Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and my guest, Dr. Chris Marsh, Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Maryland and author, as we mark Black History Month with a discussion on where America stands in achieving Dr. Martin Luther King's vision of African Americans achieving economic freedom. Don't miss this special edition of Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voa.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Gina Rofo in Washington. Have a wonderful weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is expanding sanctions against the Wagner Group, the Kremlin-backed paramilitary organization led by Yevgeny Prigozhin. Members of the group have committed atrocities and human rights abuses in Ukraine and elsewhere around the world. U.S. sanctions target Wagner's key infrastructure and associated front companies, its connections to the gold and diamond sectors, its battlefield operations in Ukraine, producers of Russia's weapons, and those administering Russia-occupied areas of Ukraine. This action, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken, supports our goal to degrade Moscow's capacity to wage war against Ukraine, to promote accountability for those responsible for Russia's war of aggression and associated abuses, and to place further pressure on Russia's defense sector. The Wagner Group reportedly deployed 50,000 personnel to Ukraine, including 10,000 contractors and 40,000 convicts recruited from Russia's prisons, according to the White House. The Department of State's newly announced sanctions include a range of Wagner's key infrastructure, including an aviation firm used by Wagner, a Wagner propaganda organization, and Wagner front companies. In addition, the State Department announced steps to impose visa restrictions on 531 members of the Russian Federation military for actions that threaten the sovereignty, territorial integrity, or political independence of Ukraine. Concurrently, the Department of the Treasury designated the Wagner Group for being responsible for its violence against civilians in the Central African Republic, among other reasons. For the first time, the United States designated the Wagner Group as a significant transnational criminal organization, augmenting existing sanctions on the group. Wagner personnel, said the Treasury Department in a statement, have engaged in an ongoing pattern of serious criminal activity, including mass executions, rape, child abductions, and physical abuse in the Central African Republic and Mali. Expanded U.S. sanctions against the Wagner Group recognize the transcontinental threat the group has become, including in Africa and in Russia's brutal war of choice in Ukraine. Secretary of State Blinken said, "The United States is steadfast in our resolve against Russia's aggression and other destabilizing behavior worldwide."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.